We will call the resources meeting to order. It is, as, because we always start on time, it's exactly 1 o'clock. Thanks, everyone, for attending. Representative Tuck, Kawasaki, Wilson, co-chair Newman, Guttenberg, and Olson, and Chair Johnson. Today, we'll be taking up valuable committee time with four resolutions from the powerful chair of judiciary. Appreciate you taking time from that meeting and coming here. There is one thing I do want to, a little housekeeping. We have every day after this meeting, we have the Labor and Commerce Committee meeting in here, so it will be imperative that we end as closely to on time as possible. As the chair and a couple of members are sitting on this committee, I think we'll probably be getting dirty looks about 5 to 1 on a regular, or 5 to 3 on a regular basis from the chair of Labor and Commerce. So we will need to be very close on our time, so we will be starting as close to time as on time as possible.
Thank you.
Yeah, questions?
Not a question. We'll be starting at 3:15, so we've got a little bit of slack built into it.
We will, still, 15 minutes we, will still tr- we will still try to end as close to on time as we possibly can. With that, anything else to come before the committee before we get started? Representative Amherst, would you introduce yourself? And we will start with number 2, HCR 2, and we'll just go in sequential order. So if that's okay with you, Representative Amherst.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jay Ramers, representative from District 10. Representative Kawasaki and I, and Representative Guttenberg, reside in a community where the price of home heating oil nearly touched $5 earlier in this winter cycle, or in the last winter cycle. And the cost of natural gas, though available to 1,100 light commercial and residential customers, is the highest in the nation at $22.91 per MCF. So like many members of this building, we have a vested interest in not only seeing an in-state bullet line, but also in its expediency. So you will hear today, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, with regard to these four resolutions, that like the old cliche goes about the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. And so here we have issued four separate resolutions that incrementally approach an in-state bullet line. House Resolution number 2, the first of those four resolutions, addresses supply. Supply obviously is a critical component to any in-state gas line. We certainly have addressed that with regard to the large diameter line and how many TCF of proven reserves are required, you know, for a 4.5 BCF pipeline per day. As it relates to an in-state bullet line, the limitation that was expressed by both bodies last spring when we passed a resolution about an in-state bullet line, and the same language that was used by the governor when she talked about a 460 million or 480 million cubic foot a day in-state line in her state of the state, when she addressed us 2 weeks ago. It's about a half a billion cubic feet per day. So if you annualize that, it would be about 180 billion cubic feet a year. If you wanted a 20-year amortization on your pipe, then you would need 180 billion cubic feet times 20 years, which is 3.6 trillion cubic feet. Presently, the Gubik Field has proven reserves in the range of 600 billion cubic feet, and Anadarko is drilling their third exploratory well right now. And sometime in the near future, I think that we will get an interim report from them on how successful that drilling progress is. HCR number 2 addresses on line 4 of the title, and other areas on the North Slope, if necessary, in sufficient quantities to support a bullet line project. And this asks for assistance from the governor in securing a contingent supply of commercial gas, so that in the event that the Anadarko drilling project shows up, say, 1.5 or 2 or 2.5 trillion cubic feet of gas, but not enough to amortize all the gas over the full 20 years, that the governor will step in and help secure a contingent supply of commercial gas. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would conclude my opening remarks and be available to answer questions from the committee.
Are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Kawasaki?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Representative Ramos, bullet line is a term of art. Can you define a bullet line for the committee? Or is it defined in this resolution?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I think you're right. A bullet line is, the synonym would be an in-state gas line. A bullet line in this case is a term of a term of art that I don't think has a legal definition, but I am referring, without naming the entity, to NSTAR, which is the only company that's presently looking and has had lengthy dialogue with Anadarko, who is looking for gas in the Gubic area and is interested in actually building a private sector pipe from where the gas is to where the people are that need it.
Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki, also bear in mind that definitions are probably not consistent with the resolution, as it is a, you know, not a statutory document. It's just kind of a recommendation. So it is what it is, or is what it, what the sponsor wants it to be, probably, or the reader. Representative Newman, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ramos, first I want to say the amount of work that you've done on this is considerable, and the knowledge that you have that you bring to the table on this as a past co-chair of resources for 2 years while we were doing through ACES and AGEA, you certainly are knowledgeable on the facts, so I consider that to be a huge benefit when you're doing this. So when we were looking at, when I was reading over this, and I just want some clarification so we can, I'd like to see it on the record, and I know that you probably have some good ideas. On page 2 and line 20, you're looking at identifying what you expect the administration or the governor to identify entities. How do you envision the administration will go about meeting this request?
Through the chair, Co-Chairman Newman, I thank you for your question. In fact, for the purposes of an in-state bullet line and not for a petrochemical industry, there is an inferior supply of gas only 60 miles further north, and that's the Conoco supply of gas, but it's a wet gas with a lot of NGLs, natural gas liquids, and it would have to incorporate into a tariff for South Central and for the interior 60 more miles of pipe through the most vigorous terrain and the construction of a gas treatment plant. But nevertheless, the gas is there, and in the same way, Representative Newman, if you had, and I'm not suggesting that you do, but if you had insufficient credit and you came to another member of the committee, say Representative Olson, and asked him to act as a guarantor to your line of credit to stand behind you, in the same way that NSTAR has got to go out into the public arena and market the financing of this pipeline. They have stated in the other body that they have $1 billion to put down, and they have $3 billion worth of financing to put together, and don't require anything of the state except to get out of the way, which we will cover in HCR 5. Nevertheless, it would be helpful if they had a letter and a dialogue on the record with the state of Alaska saying that the state would assure a contingent supply of gas behind whatever volume of gas are in proven reserves, in the same way that we've had a very significant dialogue in this building about the importance of Point Thompson to the viability of a large diameter pipe, even though it's broadly understood that there's a lot of gas on the North Slope, and yet Point Thompson is seen as a critical component to prove, because it's proven reserves. And the state of Alaska has access through dialogue to a lot of other proven reserves, but they are inferior for the purposes of an in-state line because they're 60 miles further north, and the gas isn't dry. The unique quality of the Gubic gas is that it's dry gas, the same as Cook Inlet gas, meaning that you could hook it up right now to your stove, to your space heat, or to your your dryer, and use it without any treatment or conditioning. I hope that answered your question.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the therefore be it resolved, I just wanted to hear on the record the two lines that bother me in particular, line 18 on page 2, line 24 on page 2, that the legislature doesn't cede any power or authority over our ability to tax, our ability to set that rate. The fact that this goes on to talk about directed at the governor to negotiate terms that are reasonable commercially to support it. I want to make sure that this body knows that I'm not in favor of having the governor negotiate it until it comes back to the legislature to finalize it. And the all actions necessary sort of concern me personally. I just don't want to cede our authority too early in the game.
Comment, Representative Rainer?
Okay.
Okay. That's your answer? Representative Olson?
Isn't there a certain amount of capacity for NGLs already in Cook Inlet? I believe the LNG plant in Nikiskie, the gas sold out in Nikiskie is sold on a BTU basis rather than on a volume basis. And the non-gas liquids would increase the BTUs.
Through the chair, Representative Olson, you've sat on this committee for 5 years. If you say so, then I'm with you.
I'm not positive. That was a question, but
I believe through the chair. I believe that you're accurate. And although I would say through the chair that the first molecule would travel through this pipe 5 years from now, and if we consider the deliverability problems associated with the Cook Inlet right now. And depending on whether you believe some of the more optimistic estimates that we've had, that there are, you know, some wild volume of gas yet to be discovered in the Cook Inlet versus the way that private entities are behaving, which is transitioning to other areas that have a robust supply of gas. Arguably, the Cook Inlet, which already is showing indications of being a depleted field, will be very likely much more so 5 years from now by the time that this bullet line is in place. So what you say is probably accurate, but the question is how much gas will be there, and then you know, your issue is very relevant in that context.
Follow-up?
Representative Olson.
It's probably a moot point anyway, because I don't think we have an export license that runs out that far.
Through the chair, point made, and we will address that in HCR4.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make in reference to Representative Kawasaki, and it's too bad he left the room. But, you know, I think that some of his concerns about that he brought up about request for the governor, you know, the governor and the administration are in a position to solicit requests, I think. And I think if entities come to the state, that's probably the first place to go to is the department and the administration. You know, with their needs, permitting can be looked at. There's a multitude of requests that they maybe need or through a discussion on that. And so I just wanted to weigh in on my opinion on that. I think that there is plenty of room for the administration in the governor's office to assist in that.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. But I think the governor and the administration are the ones that negotiate those contracts and then bring them to the legislature for approval. So I don't think we're ceding any power or anything in acting in doing that. We're just pointing out that they already have as much.
Absolutely.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In concurrent resolution number 2, which is the one we're discussing right now, all this does is say that you want a bullet line, an in-state, so we're not talking about sending it anywhere else. I just want to make sure I know that I realize that there's more to come, but I just want to make sure that I know exactly what each one does. So this one, number 2, just gets an in-state line, or hopefully gets an in-state line. And that is it.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, HCR number 2 simply addresses the supply component for an in-state bullet line only. You are correct. And it addresses simply the supply piece. that if we are building a line with the capacity of 180 billion cubic feet a year, and if we would assume for the purposes of computing a tariff or computing a payoff of that line, that it would be at a minimum of 20 years. So 180 billion cubic feet times 20 years would be 3.6 trillion cubic feet, or 3.6 TCF. And were you to try to finance this package, the entity on Wall Street or the credit facility that you accessed would want to know, do you have enough gas, and how much gas do you have, and how expensive is the pipe that you're building, and a variety of other questions. Who are your customers? How robust is your marketplace? And it would begin, I think, the economic term is the supply chain, and so what we are talking about is the supply component and the source of gas, and because the anticipation is that this in-state bullet line would start on the North Slope, and the more south that we are, the shorter the pipe, and the terrain is much more rugged the more north that you go, and more expensive per mile. So the ideal source of gas through the chair would be the Nenana Basin, because that gas is so close to the Fairbanks community and so close to South Central, and although the seismic and the topography suggests that it's very much like South Central, the prevailing conventional wisdom suggests that the Nenana Basin has puddles of gas that may aggregate to as much as there is in Cook Inlet, but not likely to be large pools of gas. And so although Doyon and its partners are going to begin a drilling program in June of this year, and they have a range of expectations that are, go from modest to very optimistic, we think it's much more likely that an area that already has proven reserves of 600 billion cubic feet in a well that has been capped for decades is more likely to yield the commercial volumes necessary for a 20-year pipe that is of sufficient size to be commercial and to be viable and profitable for somebody to build for 600 miles and deliver to the rail belt marketplace. So your answer is yes.
Thank you.
Any additional questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. Representative Ramos, you've used a term a number of times that, like the definition of a bullet line, also mean different things to different people, and that the term is proven reserves. My understanding, the term proven reserves, as far as, well, let's see, who would it be? It would be the industry folks that come before us, the producers. Their definition, and I think it's an industry-wide definition, of proven reserves is if it becomes to a point where it's economically viable and are actually in the process of extracting it. It's not a definition in here that you've just mentioned it. You know, it's not like I've got 500 gallons in my fuel tank, that's a proven reserve. Kind of an analogy, if it's proven reserve, if I'm pulling it off there and I know it's there. I mean, I think we all think there's a whole lot of oil and gas on the slope that's probably, the geologists would tell you that it's there, but the economists and the other folks would say it's not there and it's not proven. It's probably known until there's a pipeline to it or somebody's funded the project. You know, and many times I've just scratched my head and said, you know, they wouldn't say proven. The number for proven reserves is always lower than what oil is there, and it's always been kind of frustrating between what lay people like us think it is and what industry or the economists think about it. But my just a comment on that, because it kind of drives me crazy as well. But in the resolves on page 2 on line 18, which is really what this is about, the resolve, by taking all actions necessary, encouraging the governor to take all actions necessary. How far do you see that being? I mean, could it be to such an extent that it goes over half a B and supplants the contract with TransCanada, or is it so important that it pushes other things back or gets the state into a liability, where it's $500 million.
I understand. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, proven reserves is a legal term, and it's a bookable, the legal term allows a large oil or gas concern actually to book reserves onto its balance sheet. And then by gradation, there are other terms, and I think you're correct, known, or there are, we'd have to get somebody in the industry up here, but a proven reserve truly is a proven reserve, and you are correct, I believe, that the estimation is often that there's a great deal more gas or oil in that area. I always marvel at the basic difference between oil and gas entities and mining prospects. It seems that a mining prospect always suggests that the maximum amount of recoverable minerals are there, and oil and gas concerns probably for taxation purposes always estimate that the minimum amount is there. So I share your fascination with that proposition. With regard to line 18 and 19, I'm not bashful to tell you that I hope that this legislature has the courage to cancel the AGIA contract, which I find to be fundamentally flawed. And on another day, I do hope to come before this committee and have a robust discussion on that, because I think it's a waste of time and money and human resources to work on that. That being said, I do abide by the law. The law right now says that we have ceded over any project larger than 500 million cubic feet to a Canadian company, and I will take my lumps like a good loser and tell you that all action necessary is meant to be within the current framework of what our statutes say. So this is a bullet line that would be 500 million cubic feet a day or less.
Additional questions?
Thank you.
I think, after, you know, looking at this and after Representative Wilson's question, I think I'd like to step back a little bit, Representative Ramerson, have you, because I think you very clearly, you know, these are very, they're three very closely related, four very closely related resolutions, and they deal with supply and delivery and different elements. Would you kind of go through an overview before we take testimony on this? Maybe we can avoid questions on sure. two if it's going to be taken up in three and four. So kind of an overview on what three, four, and five are.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. And I will tell you our experience in the Energy Committee is that we took testimony from folks who may have touched on all four of the resolutions and any that were relevant. We asked them as the subsequent resolutions came up whether they had anything else to ask was the way that the chairs of the Energy Committee chose to approach this. With regard to these four resolutions, and I do appreciate your question, the first resolution, HCR2, addresses supply, which is such a critical component to any project. And the resolution 3 and 4 address the other side of supply, which is demand. It's important that you have a matched supply with demand. And if supply at 500 million cubic feet a day is 180 billion cubic feet per year, the three components that make up demand, the demand side of an in-state gas pipeline, are residential and light commercial. And that would be with the gasification of the interior, which although there are only 90,000 people in the interior, because of our subarctic temperatures, and it's 40 degrees below zero today in Representative Guttenberg and Representative Kawasaki's community, we using degree days, would consume approximately 80% of the natural gas that the South Central market does, even though it's 3 to 3.5 times as large as the Fairbanks market. But if you aggregated all of that demand together, the military bases, the universities, the hospitals, the refineries, all of Anchorage residential and light commercial, all of Fairbanks residential and light commercial, any other communities that would be passed, all of Kenai, that demand is about 60 billion cubic feet a year, which is only 1/3 of the pipe capacity for an in-state gas line. So HCR3, the next resolution that we take up, will address the restart of the Agrium plant Representative Olson's, adjacent to Representative Olson's community. And if the Agrium plant had an available supply of inexpensive gas, we could recapture those 250 jobs and the value-added market with the urea plant. Yes.
Representative Rammers, and I would like to keep it at a 30,000-foot.
Understood.
You know, supply-demand.
Understood.
You can kind of, so Understood. We see the whole picture before we
HCR,
drill down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. HCR 3 speaks to the industrial component, which is 60 BCF. That would make the pipe two-thirds full. HCR 4 addresses having this administration, who is the sole agent that could pursue a dialogue with the U.S. Department of Energy about an expansion of our export licenses. Representative Olson touched on presently that export license is only being renewed 2 years at a time, but we don't have any discussion about an eventual expansion of that license. HCR 4 approaches an expansion of that license to 60 BCF a year. Notwithstanding some concerns by Co-Chair Newman about the ability to develop synthetic gas and a gas-to-liquid industry in-state as well. And HCR 5 addresses wood bison. It addresses things like what's going on in the Nenana Basin right now, where we have tried for many years to induce a private entity to go into the Nenana Basin and do exploration, and now another arm of the state government is trying to introduce a potentially endangered species into precisely the area where we're trying to drill for gas. And so it asks the governor to assist government in getting out of the way so that a private entity can make a final investment decision by year end 2010. Obviously, by statute, you cannot force a private entity to make a decision that either for or against, but you certainly can instruct government to get out of the way to facilitate that decision on a timely basis. And that would be a summary of the four resolutions.
Thank you, Representative. And the reason for doing that was so that if we have questions related to demand, we could wait on those until 3 and 4 and the other areas. So specifically, let's deal with 2 now, the supply. Any additional questions from the committee? Thank you, Representative Rammers. I do think we have someone in the Elizabeth Gray to testify, and if you want to stay close, we'd appreciate it. Elizabeth, would you step forward, identify yourself, and state your testimony, please. And I do see that you are signed up to do HCR 2. Are you interested in testifying all of them or just HCR 2?
I would like Co-Chair Johnson to address all of them in one fell swoop, if that's okay.
It is, I think, somewhat unusual for us to take testimony on bills not before the committee, but I think this is kind of an unusual situation, and I will allow that, I think, in this case, unless the committee has just some real glaring technical problems with me doing so, I will allow you to testify, bearing in mind that we are dealing with only number 2 now, and 3, 4, and 5 will come later, and we'll just depend on the committee to remember her testimony at that time and save you the pain of having to do it twice, or 3 times or 4 times. So with that, if you'd state your name for the record and continue, please.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Newman, members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Elizabeth Gray, and I'm the Assistant Manager for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. We're here today to let you know that the Matanuska-Susitna Borough supports the construction of a natural gas line to help meet the immediate gas needs of South Central and Interior Alaska. I'd like to touch briefly on some of the problems that we face today. As you're aware, according to previous testimony by Mr. Ramirez, the Cook Inlet natural gas supplies are dwindling and existing supplies are increasingly difficult to reach. Meanwhile, the demand for gas in Alaska is growing. The supply shortfall will grow over the next few years. In 2010, local natural gas supplies in South Central Alaska are projected to be short by 8.6 billion cubic feet for its needs. By 2012, the shortfall is estimated at 11 billion cubic feet. Estimates show that 52% of the state's population will be affected if the state runs out of gas supplies in the next few years. The proposed Bullet natural gas pipeline can be completed within the next few years and meet near-term gas needs and create new economic activities as well. The Matsu Borough supports the creation of a gas line, which will help provide energy security for the state of Alaska. The Bullet line will facilitate natural resource extraction, and value-added processing to include development of a major cement plant at Globe Creek and Live and Good, and possibly reactivation of the agrium fertilizer plant in Kenai. I would also like to bring to the attention of the committee a project that will support the construction of the bullet line. This project is the proposed rail extension from the Alaska Railroad main line to Port McKenzie. This rail line will help lower the cost of building the bullet line, which will provide much-needed gas to Alaska. And by utilizing the Port McKenzie rail location, the bullet line is projected to cost approximately $100 million less than bringing construction equipment and materials in through other potential ports of entry. According to an October 2008 study by the Institute of Social and Economic Research, the additional resource extraction investment that will be facilitated by the rail extension will generate 500 to 1,000 direct full-time jobs. According to the 2000 Northern Economic Study, the rail extension project itself will also have a statewide benefit and is estimated to create 3,200 to 3,400 construction jobs. Currently, two-thirds of Alaska's economy depends on the federal government or the petroleum industry for jobs. The Mat-Su Borough wholeheartedly supports the immediate construction of a natural gas line and rail extension to further diversify the economy and limit the state's dependence on these two sectors. We would like to thank you, the committee members, for your time and support, and this concludes our testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Elizabeth, you mentioned that 52% of the people would be affected. Now, are you just looking at the population and assuming that everyone is going to be using gas when you make that statement?
We looked at, we had a pie chart which showed the that showed the state's population, and it showed the number of gas users. And so we did anticipate the number of people who are currently using, so and projected on that amount.
Representative Wilson.
Through the chair.
So so when you say 52% of the population of the state, you're saying that that many people use gas now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? Elizabeth, thanks. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You have to speak up or we'll okay, skip right over you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Real quick.
I've been promoted, too. Thank you.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And you're welcome. The question that I have is when you talked about, we were talking about supply, but we're also talking about building a line. You mentioned that we can bring the line down with a rail, a current rail or a future rail down to Point McKenzie.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, that would be a future rail.
And I don't know what, Mr. Chair, I don't know if we have determined, I might have to ask this for Mr. Ramirez when he comes back, if we're going to tie into a 20-inch line that I believe already exists in Palmer, or if we're planning on making that route stop at Point McKenzie, or future going all the way down to the Kenai Basin. So I don't know if you have the answer to that question, but I can reserve that for Ramirez if you
have. And I believe what I heard you say was that by building the line, it will reduce the cost by bringing in the pipe, not the delivery of the gas, but it will save money when you deliver the pipe for the actual construction of the line, not the actual line. And I know you're perfectly capable of speaking for yourself, but I think that's what I heard. Is that?
That is correct, Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Any additional questions? Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you. Just this is, give me a little geography test here. I mean, it's a question answer for me, because if the scenario came about where instead of the bullet line coming down basically the Parks Highway, that there was a route that came down the Richardson into Glen Allen and then came across where it has been proposed, where would that hit the Mat-Su Borough and a come in at a place that was convenient, also work for you?
Through the chair to Representative Guttenberg. I'm going to rely on my backup resource here okay. for a moment.
Representative Guttenberg, there is the line would go, there is both a line on both ends that would join prior to it coming to even Anchorage. There's one up in Palmer and one north of
so those
Palmer.
Proposals coming down would come down like the Glen.
Roughly the same.
Okay.
They'll get to South Central roughly the same area. One's up by Palmer and the other one's by Sutton, so.
Everybody's.
No. Representative Olson?
Brief comment. I think the other route was about 80 or 90 miles longer.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's, they're capable, you don't have to go all the way to the same point. There's other entry points into the supplies.
Recognizing that at the end of the day, it's going to be the economic forces that figure what this out. I just want to make sure that it is capable of taking care of what we want to take care of.
Right. Any additional questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Also like to point out that online we have Curtis there with NSTAR, and I have Curtis's to answer questions only. But we have online also Tom, and I'll probably butcher this, Lakosh?
Yeah, that's pretty close. The family pronounces it Lakosh, and I'd like to ask the chairman to allow full 12 minutes for all four bills at once.
Well, 12 minutes may be optimistic, but we will we'll give you as much as we can.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm vehemently opposed to the resolutions because I think the bullet line is on par with Wally's water line to California. And I could spend most of this time denigrating the assumptions here, but let me first suggest a scenario. If one of these bills, or you pass a bill or resolution that states that the in-state needs, that Agrium qualifies for in-state need in accordance with the terms of the export lease, we could get those folks back to work the day after the bill becomes effective, and we will have an additional 40% for the South Central region that'll take us far enough down the line that if we still need the gas in 10 years, that we will then have half of the line to build from Fairbanks to Anchorage because the Trans-Canada or Denali line will go to Fairbanks. If we build the bullet line now, 3 to 6 years after it's built, the northern 350 miles of the line will become obsolete because it will be much cheaper to in tariffs to buy the gas from the main line rather than the bullet line. So who's going to carry that extra $2+ billion worth of obsolete cost is what I'm saying. This whole thing is premature prior to consideration of the Rail Belt Energy Plan being developed by Alaska Energy Authority. We're trying our best to weatherize and conserve energy and switch to renewables. The governor wants to go to 50% renewables. Chugach says 90% renewables in its portfolio. And that's in direct conflict with this bullet line. The need will not grow, it will shrink for natural gas, and we should really consider a realistic plan for how we get the gas to Agrium and South Central quick enough, and that's canceling the export license. That will cause Marathon and Chevron to go out looking for oil for gas to keep its gas line going. I don't believe the governor when she says that the export license encourages production. It does just the opposite. What will encourage exploration and production in Cook Inlet is closing down that plant through a closure of the export license. And you could do that toot sweet by establishing Agrium as a qualified in-state need pursuant to the conditions of the extension that would require providing for that in-state need from the exported gas. So the obsolescence of the north 350 miles worth of line is inconsistent with public needs, the public interest. The fact that you would be losing money from North Slope gas that could otherwise garner full production tax if it were shipped down the main line is another consideration. We have a chance to carry ourselves over in South Central with the revocation of the export license. I'm wholly cognizant of Fairbanks' problems, and I'd like to suggest a few solutions for the Fairbanks representatives. You've got a new wood pellet plant. You've got the Healy Clean Coal Project coming back online. You've got a wood waste-to power plant on Eielson that burned paper that shut down in 2007 that you should fire up. You've got geothermal resources there that you should develop. You should develop biomass and combine with coal gasification. You've got a lot of options there that I would fully support subsidy of with the alternate energy fund, but please don't burden the folks here in South Central with an unnecessary $4 billion pipeline. For the $4 billion it takes to build that pipeline, you could build a gigawatt of renewable energy sources at $3,000 per kilowatt installed and still have $1 billion left over for the transmission lines. That is really insane to pay for that pipeline and then pay for the additional gas generators on top of the $4 billion and then pay for the fuel, the gas, on top of that. If you invested, if NSTAR invested $3 billion in renewable energy, we could go, we could take the entire rail belt into an all-electric system where you wouldn't need any gas or oil or wood or coal heat source. So there's a lot of issues here that are way too premature to put forth in a resolution to the governor when AEA is coming out with a rail belt energy plan, where the necessity and the cost are not well documented in this instance, where in fact there would be a detriment to the state from loss of revenues from that North Slope gas that can go down the main line. And there are so many issues that require a more in-depth investigation that, you know, that should preclude a knee-jerk reaction here to try and provide, you know, a subsidy to NSTAR in this particular instance.
Tom, can I get you to wrap up?
Fairbanks has problems, but that shouldn't become problems for South Central that could be solved very quickly by canceling that export license.
Thank you, Tom. Can I get you to wrap up?
Okay, so I really request that this committee take testimony from AEA on the rail belt plan before they go forward with this resolution. If anything, the committee should immediately consider drafting a resolution to make Agrium an in-state use qualified for cancellation of the export license. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Mr. Lakash? Thank you very much, Tom. And with that, is there any other testimony? Is there anyone else online to testify? Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? Hearing that, I will.
Mr. Chair, I won't call you Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if there was anybody from the administration to respond, because we're asking them to do something, and seems appropriate to get an understanding from where what their position is about.
I don't see anyone from the administration here, but they certainly were noticed. With that, if we want to have invited testimony, we can, but with that, I'm going to close public testimony on a minimum of HCR 2. Seeing no one else to testify. Representative Newman has a question of Curtis there. Curtis, are you there?
I have prepared testimony, but I'll be willing just to answer questions.
That would be appreciated.
Okay.
And if you would send that testimony to us, we'd certainly like to hear that. Unless you want to testify, but I had you down for questions only, Curtis. So.
That's fine. I'm more than happy with that.
Okay. Curtis, there's a question of Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Curtis, I was wondering, you know, I don't know what the cost is now for natural gas to heat homes. I'm using diesel, just like the sponsor. But if this line is built with the amount of people that you have online, we heard from the Matsu representative, it's 51% of the population, what would the price of gas be? Can you give us an estimate delivered to a house compared to what it is now?
Well, right now, all of our gas contracts are indexed on various indices. Our largest contract is indexed on a trailing average of Henry Hub prices, and Henry Hub is a market indicator. Right now, Henry Hub, now the other one is a 36-month trailing average, but Henry Hub today is trading at the $5 range. We feel in order to make this line economically viable that the tariff would be somewhere around $2.50, understanding there would be distance sensitive rates, i.e. Fairbanks would probably pay less of the tariff because the pipeline is does not take as long to get to Fairbanks, obviously, as it does to South Central. So if you were to use today's rates, it's $5.05 plus $2.50. A customer could be paying $7.55. Currently, customers in Cook Inlet pay $10.46 an MCF for gas. In Fairbanks, they pay over $23 an MCF for gas. And so depending on the market, it would be basically market price with a tariff. I hope that answers your question, but we can't predict out what 2015 is, but the common denominator in the lower 48 determining gas prices is the Henry Hub or New York Mercantile Exchange rate.
Follow-up, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Curtis, I just want to make sure that we're clear on that. The cost of delivery or the tariff of about $2.50, if you take the cost of building a pipeline, divide it by the number of customers, you'd come up with $2.50.
That's what we feel it needs to be economically viable. Now, in our assumptions is that Fairbanks would be using natural gas more so than they are today. You would have Flint Hills as a customer. We have had conversations with them. The military bases in Fairbanks always find themselves on the BRAC list of late. One of the reasons is the high cost of energy on the military bases. Natural gas, they would lower that. And here in South Central, you have the residential. And actually, NSTAR serves about half the state's population overall in just home heating, and when you add power generation that's produced here in Cook Inlet by Chugach Electric and Mississauga Power, they serve about two-thirds of the state's needs as they supply power to Fairbanks as well as Homer and into Seward. But one thing is we need an industrial anchor to make this line viable. That's an Agrium or that's an LNG plant that we currently have in South Central, but they're not being utilized, obviously, to their full potential.
Thank you, Curtis. Now, it's inspiring that you can actually lower the cost, you know, 25%.
Well, what I'm saying is that is the price today. All of when we negotiate gas supply contracts, all of our contracts are approved by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Now, if you were an Agrium or if you were an LNG plant or even a Flint Hills out of Fairbanks, you would negotiate independently with the producer of that gas for the cost of gas. It does not go through the RCA. Only the utilities would go through the Regulatory Commission. But the tariff would be about the same for everybody.
And I guess just one thing that
Mr. Chair, one thing to
point out too, you know, the 480 million cubic feet that's currently being used in the Cook Inlet area, we add this on there, I think it's just all the more reason for the administration to find, you know, opportunities, whether it's increased LNG, whether it's Agrium, or added value processing of our natural gas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Curtis, you mentioned that it's going to have to be up to $7.50 in order to come out with the tariffs. Now, in the last, you know, let's say in the last 10 years, and maybe I should say even in just in the last 5 years, what have been the lowest prices and the highest prices, and has it gone either way where it was too low or too high?
Well, the tariff is the section that would be you know, if NSTAR was to build a pipeline, the tariff would be the cost to build the line. And like I said, we anticipate $2.80. What the actual price will be, we assume will be market conditions. Using the Henry Hub indice, they have been as high as, they've spiked as high as $14 and $15. They have gone as low as $4 and below in the last 7 years. Matter of fact, when the last time Conoco and BP and Exxon looked at a large line in 2000, 2001, the price of gas in the lower 48 was below $4 an MCF, and that's what's that's one of the reasons that that project was scrapped. The price of gas was too low in the lower 48. Right now, it's been hovering in the $5 to $7 range pretty continuously for the last 2 to 3 years. So it's been pretty stable. There's been some spikes in and up, but it's a pretty stable commodity. But again, it would be what market prices would be in 2015.
Follow-up purposes?
Right now, Cook Inlet has the lowest price gas in the country delivered price to your home.
Representative Wilson, follow-up?
Yes, thank you. So, I mean, it's possible that we could be even lower than what they are now, or it's possible, depending on gas prices, that it could be higher, a lot higher than what even Fairbanks is paying now, depending on the market price, right?
Correct. The market price is what you would buy it for or negotiate for at the time. One of the things, though, is if we did a study last year, and that is if the consumers of South Central Alaska switched to fuel oil, the next lowest price, not counting the cost of conversion, trucks on the road, any of those costs, just the commodity itself, that's a $500 million hit to the local economy. So basically, looking at that, in 8 years, a bullet line would pay for itself just for South Central cost. So switching is not really an alternative here in Cook Inlet, but we figure we can at least lower the cost in Fairbanks by more than half if they were connected by pipe to natural gas off the North Slope.
Representative Wilson.
If you know those facts, what would be, and I'm just asking since you do, that you might know what the facts would be if it was the electricity?
That I do not know, since we're not in the electrical business. However, the utilities are paying a market price for natural gas, and they generate, I believe, 90% of the power for the rail belt. So there's also the conversion of natural gas to electricity. And if you were to heat your home with electricity, your bill would be, I believe it's like $350 as compared to $154 if it was to natural gas.
Okay, thank you.
So it would be higher with electricity.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Gutenberg, excuse me.
Thank you. Mr. Thayer, I was disappointed that you weren't prepared to make predictions out to 2015. I think that was a little fishy.
Well,
I would like to track your numbers, that's all.
What was that again? I'm sorry?
I would just track your numbers. I know during the summer, one of the things we heard from the oil analysts, they said they did not expect to see the price of oil go down much below 100 in the foreseeable future, and the next line was we're generally not right, and I thought that was their qualifier.
The Department of Revenue does track, or they did as of this summer, they did predict Henry Hub pricing out several years. I think it was like a 10-year prediction, but again, I haven't looked at that because, like you said, the prices have fluctuated so much that it is just a prediction.
So my question is, I had some folks from your organization in my office earlier this year, and they were talking about looking for some stability or some certainty from the state that they were supporting, that we were supporting this project, or something that they, in many ways, just something to take to the bank, saying the state was supportive. Does HCR2 or any of the others help you on that matter?
They clearly do in the sense of the legislature. I do know that the governor, and we have not seen it, but the governor is to be introducing some language or a bill on some clarity on regulation and how the pipeline would be treated, and I believe that's going to be submitted to the legislature, but we have not seen that language. But as with anything, there just needs to be a little bit of clarity, because the past year we spent $5 million on this project. We expect to spend 15, and then you ramp up to $60 million next year on this. And so I know that there is just a better understanding of the process that we'll be in as we move forward with a project of this size.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. We had a lot of discussion over the size and diameter of pipelines and volume and capacity. One question that always came up and comment that was made that on a small diameter pipe with low volumes that tariff rates would have to be much, much higher. Have you, and if you're going to use the Henry Hub Index for pricing, I guess how do you get to a rate that's low enough for consumers in Anchorage or Fairbanks?
Well, first off, and I, the Henry Hub is just a common indice that is used, and so whether that is the negotiating point for gas contracts with a producer out forward, we don't know that. We have not come to any type of commercial terms with a producer. But as far as the line, our base case is a 20-inch pipeline. It could be a 24-inch pipeline, and we anticipate that pipeline would solve and serve all of Central Fairbanks and the Rail Belt communities for many years to come. And you can always add compression. The reason that it is 500 BCF or a half a BCF a day is to be AGEA compliant. You are correct in that the more gas you can put through a pipeline, you could lower the tariff. If the gas supply is there and the users are at the other end, then clearly we could produce more pipe, or not pipe, but pressure through the pipeline to increase that volume. But we're trying to be AGEA compliant, which passed the legislature.
Representative Kawasaki?
And then a follow-up just on House Resolution Number 2. Under the be it resolved, it asks that the governor take all necessary actions to come up with commercially reasonable terms. I'm afraid that if you have an uncommercial, unprofitable line with high tariffs, that that you'll come back to the governor or the legislature for some concessions. And I'm just afraid that this resolution will impact the governor's thoughts and the third floor thoughts and the rest of the legislature. And so that's just my thought and concern. Thanks.
We're not asking for any financial concessions from the state. This is a private enterprise project.
But you will, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kawasaki.
At some point in time, you're going to have to come back, and the producers will have to come back to the state for tax terms.
The legislature under ACES have a 5% tax rate statewide. That's one of the reasons I think that because of the actions of the legislature and the governor's office, we're seeing the exploration in Gubik and also in Doyon and possibly the Yukon Flats. And so, to my understanding, the state has established a tax rate in which has spurred this interest in all these new exploration, which is a great thing to have happen. One of our issues is with regulation and permitting. Both those are functions of government. Both can move as fast and as slow as it takes. And so one of our concerns is that we can establish a framework within the state that this is a priority for the state, and the regulatory and the permitting issues can be resolved in a very timely fashion.
Representative Tuck, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Thayer, did you hear Mr. LaCouche's testimony earlier?
I did.
LaCouche? Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Tuck.
Now, it sounded like that there is competition on getting some of that cooking gas, that some of that is already being earmarked, not earmarked necessarily, but being has contracts to go to be exported. What did you think about his testimony on that?
Well, if we had not had the LNG plant in operation and diverting gas to Anchorage and South Central Alaska during this recent cold snap earlier last month, we would have lost part of the system as well as electrical generation. that plant is very vital, not only to help anchor a bullet line, but to stay in production, is because the volume of gas that they use is 7 days a week, 24/7, 365 days a year. And with that, that's a constant flow into that plant. A utility like NSTAR will swing. Obviously, we sometimes have a 10 times swing of what we actually, from one day to another, as can be proved when it was 20 below 1 week and 50 above. And the fields in Cook Inlet are so old that if we don't draw upon them constantly like an LNG plant would do, there's a good chance we would lose those fields and water and sand would fill them up and we would never get them back. And so the LNG plant plays a very important part in helping with that swing ratio that we have. An electrical company has a similar ratio, but not as great. But they do have peaks and valleys, and the LNG plant serves kind of as to mediate that when we need gas. So the plant, shutting the plant down actually will hurt the supplies and the reserves here in Cook Inlet, we feel.
Representative Tuck, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If there was no export contract, would you have sufficient gas in meeting the retail, commercial, and agrium needs from the Cook Inlet region?
With utilities especially, you need to have some sort of base load continuing going on 24/7 in order to be able to swing. Like if we need extra gas, we can call for it. Back in the day, 20 years ago, Cook Inlet was in a situation where any time we needed gas, it free flowed into the system. That's not the case today. The shutting that plant down would hurt that. And then the only two there's three companies looking for gas today, and that's Marathon and Conoco, and they're looking, and that's to help supply the plant and also the utility. So if you shrink a market that might be a 200 BCF market down to a 50 or 60 BCF just for the utilities, you're going to be not having as much investment and looking for new gas here in Cook Inlet, which is a concern of ours.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The four resolutions are proposing a supply of in thirds of roughly 180 billion cubic feet annually, a third going for retail, a third, I believe, going to commercial and agri plant, and a third going towards export. Is in this resolution, do you feel that NSTAR's interests and the retail and commercial interests are being met, and that the exports won't take priority in contracting to prevent a shortage for Alaska's usage?
No, because the priority would be for the utilities. The industrial customers could be interrupted through commercial arrangements, so the gas is diverted to local needs along the rail belt. So we believe that would be taken. But you need that industrial load on a bullet line to help pay for the tariff, to keep that tariff as low as possible.
Representative,
because the residential and commercial needs alone cannot support the building of a $4 billion pipeline, but with an industrial load, it does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. What I was concerned about, Mr. Speaker, no, Mr. Chair, I got it right. what I was concerned about is I just want to make sure that the exports do not take control of the amount of volume that's necessary for that line, and that the commercial and retail markets will be shrunk down, that gas will be prioritized first for Alaska's needs and then export as needed to maximize that line down the road. And I just was curious if you feel that this resolution does protect you in that.
We do, and Conoco and Marathon have been great partners, is because whenever South Central Alaska needed a diversion from the LNG plant, even though we don't have a contract to do it, they've done it. And so they have honored it, and I believe that those can be commercial terms that could be obviously written into the contract for gas delivery into South Central.
Representative Olson.
I think I can clarify part of that for Representative Tuck. The LNG export facility has been around for 40 years, approximately 40 years. During the last extension of their export license, built into the extension was the fact that demands by the local utilities would take precedence over the shipments to Japan. Up until, I believe, about 2 or 3 years ago, ConocoPhillips and Marathon had never had a load that missed delivery in Japan or was shorted. I believe in the past 6 or 8 months, they've shorted several loads to go to Japan to provide gas to NSTAR. Is that right, Curtis?
That is correct.
And another side is it's the only facility in the United States that has an exemption to the Jones Act where they can export gas overseas. And I don't think that'll change in the near future. That was one of the problems with the Port Authority. Yeah,
we can take some of this up during committee debate, which I think we're going to get to very quickly if there's any more. Is there any other questions for Mr. Thayer? Curtis, thank you. If you'll stay online, we do have some other business to take care of.
Will do.
Are there any other additional questions or debate on the committee on HCR2? Representative Wilson.
Are you going to end this by moving this one and then going to the next
that's,
one?
That's my intention, yes, ma'am.
I would like to have an amendment.
Okay. That would certainly qualify. Do you have that amendment written, or are you going to just state it conceptually?
I'm going to state it conceptually, but okay. I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
And what it's I'd like to state the whole amendment so that, and I don't know how the sponsor is feels on this, and we'll see.
I'm sure he'll tell you.
On page 2, line 18, I would delete the two words all.
That's one word.
Well, there's two alls.
Oh, both alls. All Alaskans?
Yes.
As well as all action.
Yes. And then add an S at the end of the word action, which would now read, provide energy security for Alaskans by taking actions necessary to promote the development of a bullet line. And the reason I feel that that's important is because there is no way that this action is going to hit all Alaskans, and I'm just going to give you an instance. We have hydropower, and so we get it pretty cheap. And we just converted from diesel to electricity, and now the difference is 600, or it was a difference of up to $800 a month down to less than $200 a month.
Representative Wilson, for the clarification of those people that may be reading this record in the future, would you tell who we are?
Oh, I'm sorry. My husband and I.
Your personal, okay.
Personally, okay. Yes. And there are some people that are Alaskans that this action isn't going to help. So only for purposes of later on somebody coming back and saying, wait a minute, now what about all, I just, all encompasses every single thing, and so I just would like the word all taken out, and also all actions, because just because that it's so all encompassing, and that's the reason.
Thank you. Is everyone clear on what the language is, removing the all, both alls on line 18 and adding an S to actions? A discussion, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that it does add security for all Alaskans, particularly with the concept that Governor Palin is looking at with, as Representative Wilson brought up, with hydropower electricity. The administration's talking about joint utility, cooperation and electrical generation, all tying in together. And if we can be providing more secure electrical generation in one part of the state, these grids are all going to be working together. So I think that they do work for all Alaskans. I think that
this,
if I may,
Representative Newman.
I also feel that by bringing this, a cooperative effort to bring a pipeline to either South Central into the grid expands it considerably, and I think that the word's all in there. I think it really does help all of Alaska. There's a lot of economy that comes to our state, and we're all affected by that. My comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilson, you have something to say to that? Or not? I mean, you'll have to. I thought.
Well, I just think that this particular resolution does not take care of the all. I mean, I agree with the representative that just spoke by saying that we eventually will connect everything, but this particular resolution doesn't do that.
Representative Ramirez, you have something to
thank you, Mr.
add to
Chairman.
This?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I subscribe to the cliche that rising tide lifts all boats. I think that something that strengthens an area that's soft is helpful. I think that the governor has demonstrated a growing contempt for the legislative branch of government, and that that this is just a resolution. This certainly isn't a statute, and whether the word all is in there once or twice isn't going to matter very significantly insofar as the power that a resolution carries. If I were to try to divide the baby, I would be much more open to deleting the word all Alaskans for the sentiments expressed by Representative Wilson, and maintain all action necessary for the sentiment of Co-Chair Newman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As you're not a member of this committee, I want to entertain that as a friendly amendment, but I would ask the representative if she would entertain that.
No one has moved it.
You moved the amendment. Yeah. I objected. So, and I would.
Does someone want to amend?
Well, I'm asking you if you would amend your amendment, but if you don't, I can find someone else to do it. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer maybe an amendment to the amendment, because I think taking all action necessary is a very critical part of what we're doing. All action. And I don't mind the all Alaskans. I can live without that one, too. But I really think it's important that the governor and this administration
before. So would you move? Would you move that amendment?
So my amendment to the amendment would be to possibly remove the first all is the all in front of Alaskans, but leave the all word in front of the word action. So it would read, provide energy security for all Alaskans, and for all Alaskans, or for Alaskans by taking all actions necessary.
And Representative Newman, and you would leave the S in actions then? Is that, do you have no problem with that? I'll object for discussion. Any discussion? Representative Goodberg.
Well, I like the original amendment. On the actions, I mean, Representative Newman's action amendment to leaving the all after taking. If the governor would listen to us, at some point, she could take this to the extreme. I mean, the idea that we're, I agree with everything what everybody has said, including the fact, recognizing the fact that some of them are contradictory remarks. If we increase the energy independence for one part of the state, there certainly is a ripple effect. But many parts of the state, it is so far down the line that it is small. Supporting the original amendment by Representative Wilson.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Tuck.
Yeah, I do support the original amendment as well, because I think some of the actions need to be discretionary. I don't think that we should do any and every action that's taken. I think we need to leave it to the administration to know what's best to do for making this happen.
Any other discussion? And with that, I'm going to Representative Olson.
Well, I believe the item before us is the amendment to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment, which is to remove the all. And with that, I'm going to remove my objection to the amendment to the amendment.
I'll object.
Okay, we have an objection. Then we will have a vote. And to state the amendment, it is to, if I get it correctly, on line 18,
to amend the amendment. The original amendment would be to take out both alls and add an S. The amendment to the amendment is to take out all Alaskans. So what we're...
No, all.
Just all.
Putting back in.
Just taking the first all out. Is that correct?
Correct.
No, it's putting the second all back.
Putting the second all back.
Yeah.
Is what the amendment to the amendment is. Does everyone understand that, including myself? Okay, will the secretary take the roll? You understand the amendment to the amendment?
Okay, so we're voting on...
Would you like voting on the amendment to the amendment?
The second all.
Would, to the second all, yeah. Representative Newman, would you read it as it would be, please?
So that the line 18 would read, provide energy security for all Alaskans. Provide energy security for Alaskans by taking all action necessary to promote the...
Now, is everyone clear on it? Mm-hmm. Now, would you take the roll?
By taking all actions?
No, by taking...
All
adding all back.
Yeah, that's right, all actions.
The original amendment was to take both alls out.
Right, so it'd be all actions.
Yeah.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes.
Representative Seaton is absent. Representative Edgemond is absent. Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Tuck?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Co-chair Newman?
Yes.
Co-chair Johnson?
Yes.
Three yay, four nay.
So the amendment to the amendment has failed, which brings the original amendment before us, which is to remove both alls and add an S. Is that correct?
Brief at ease.
May we have a brief at ease? Just go off the record. So before us, we have the amendment, which removes all on line 18. So it would read, providing energy security for Alaskans by taking actions necessary to promote the, is the amendment before us, and there is an objection. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
No, this is my original.
This is the original amendment. Any discussion? Madam Secretary, will you take the roll?
Representative Edgemond is absent. Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton is absent. Co-chair Newman?
No.
Co-chair Johnson?
No. So 4-3, is that the way I count that?
4 yay, 3 nay.
So the amendment does pass. With that, is there any other discussion on HCR2?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Tuck?
Yeah, I'd like to also introduce an amendment, if possible.
Okay. If you would state that amendment?
Yes, and it's in concept, but I wanted to add language and strengthen the energy needs of Alaskans. So in line 18 again.
On page 2?
On page 2. Okay. Under be it resolved, if we can add after Alaskans, add first. So provide energy security for Alaskans first by taking actions necessary to promote. And then in line 24, at the end of the line, commercially reasonable terms to support the energy needs of Alaskans, and then continuing on to say, and the economic viability of the bullet pipeline.
Read that again, please, Representative Tuck.
Yeah, I'll read from the beginning, line 24. For a commitment of natural gas production on commercially reasonable terms to support the energy needs of Alaskans and the economic viability of the bullet pipeline.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion. Is there any discussion? Representative Ramirez, do you have a
concerned with any of those as the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll be brief. This is just a resolution, and I'm fearful when we start wordsmithing resolution statutes. I'm much more mindful of because they either provide or take away rights from Alaskans. This is a resolution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Just be glad it's not a sense of the House. Or it could take a long time. I, too, agree with the wordsmithing. I'm not going to throw myself on my sword over this one. Representative Tuck, if you will read that one more time.
Yes, I'll read the first part, 918, provide energy security for Alaskans first by taking actions necessary to promote the development, continuing on. And then line 24, for a commitment of natural gas production on commercially reasonable terms to support the energy needs of Alaskans and the economic viability of the Bullitt pipeline.
Is everyone clear on that amendment? Madam Secretary, are you clear on that amendment? Okay, with that, I'll remove my objection.
Mr.
Representative Newman, do I not want to remove my objection yet?
Just I'd like to discuss one thing.
Okay, before I remove my objection, Representative Newman.
Well, I've just been thinking about with Alaskans first. You know, we've got LNG exports and stuff like that. I'm just kind of trying to, I'm running this through my mind how that affects it, but I just want to make sure for the record I'm concerned if we're talking about, you know, Alaskans first. I guess we already got in law that we have to, as Representative Olson described, but again, because of the wordsmithing thing, it's been carefully thought out the way it's written, but we'll let it go.
I also believe it's part of our Constitution, and with that, I will withdraw the amendment. Any additional amendments to come before the body?
No.
What would be any other discussion on this bill? What would be the will of the committee? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution Number 2/E with any attached recommendations or amendments and fiscal notes.
As amended, please.
As amended.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Is there any objection? Hearing none, HCR 2 moves out of committee. That brings us to HCR 3. Representative Ramirez, I believe this is yours as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief on HCR number 3. I think we've addressed a lot of the aspects surrounding the restarting of the Agrium facility. I would draw members of your committee to lines 12 through 15 that suggests on line 13.
We talk page 1?
Page 1, yes, okay. Sir. That the AGEA or a similar alternative project that offers 5 natural gas delivery points in the state is not expected to transport natural gas from the North Slope until after 2016, if ever. There have been a lot of market changes since we passed the AGEA deal last year, I'm more concerned than ever whether we're going to have a large diameter pipe. Restarting Agrium is essential as an underpinning of the economic viability of an in-state gas pipeline, and I would encourage members to vote yes for HCR 3. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of the bill sponsor? Thank you. With that, we have, is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify on HCR 3? We do have online Lisa Parker. Lisa, are you there? Hello, Lisa.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Would you please identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and continue with your testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Parker, and I am representing Agrium U.S. Briefly, we wanted to go on record as supporting the resolutions that are before you today and feel that they're important to provide economic stability to Alaska, and as well as providing jobs for Alaskans. A bit of background on Agrium. After almost 40 years in operation in the state, in September of 2007, Agrium was shut down the Kenai facility due to a lack of natural gas in Cook Inlet. At its peak, this facility put in over $350 million annually into the Alaskan economy, with the majority of that money being spent in south central Alaska. Agrium is in support of a bullet line, and we've been engaged in discussions with the various organizations and companies interested in pursuing this line. If successful in getting a bullet line, along with negotiating the various terms and conditions, this would put a $1 billion industrial facility back in operation in Alaska. Bringing the fertilizer plant back would restore jobs, 250. When we shut down our facility, we employed 150 people. A third of those today are still unemployed. It would also provide economic stability to the state of Alaska and provide jobs and incomes to the various businesses and support industries that have been impacted by our shutdown. Once operational, the facility would support and supply fertilizer product to Alaska's agricultural industry, along with the state of Alaska and the international airports in both Anchorage and Fairbanks. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Olson?
Good afternoon, Lisa. I wonder if you could clarify one point. At peak production several years ago, you were employing probably, 350 people when you were running four trains?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, at peak, we employed approximately 330 individuals plus contractors.
And the 150 you mentioned was when you were only running two trains toward the end?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Olson, that is correct. We cut back in the mid, about 2004 to 250, and then scaled back again in early 2006 to 150 because we were only operating 50% of the plant.
Thank you very much.
Any additional questions for Lisa? Is there anyone else who would like to testify in the audience or anyone else online who'd like to testify on HCR 3? Hearing none, I will close public testimony on HCR 3. Committee discussion? I will point out in fairness that as the sponsor is not here, there is the same language in this bill as there or in this resolution as there was the last. What would be the will of the committee if we're not going to discuss it? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution Number 3 /R from committee with any attached recommendations and fiscal notes.
Object.
Yeah, there is an objection. Would you like to speak to that objection?
Well, I was wondering if Representative Wilson was going to make the same amendment.
Obviously, she had that option and didn't.
Okay.
Would you like to make that amendment? Or would
yes,
you like to just
I would
move
make
on?
That amendment.
Okay. So now it is incumbent upon you to read that amendment.
Well, on line 31, page 2, the second all is the first and the second all are removed. Both the words all are removed.
Would you also like to add an S on actions?
An S on actions.
Okay. There is an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative?
We've got four of these, and I think just for consistency, the same motion, the same intent, if we believed it was valid for the first one, it certainly is valid for all of them.
That would be a valid concern if we believed in the first one. Thank
you. This is true.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative Newman?
No, sir. I think we already discussed it, plain.
Representative Gutenberg, never mind.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Ramirez.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to Representative Wilson's original concern, can I point out when it comes to Agrium and it comes to fertilizer, the cost of fertilizer is going to go up 400% on everybody in Alaska, all Alaskans that are growing anything, anybody has a lawn and garden, anybody who's growing in-state produce. So, I mean, I guess if you're an Alaskan that doesn't eat Alaskan carrots and you don't have a lawn and you don't grow flowers and you don't like them or buy them or walk by them and take any pleasure, then maybe you're not all the Alaskans I'm talking about. But I like this HCR 3 just the way that it is. This is about a pretty low common denominators, and I appreciate the concerns and this wonderful turn of conservatism by some of the members of your committee, and I'm trying to be supportive of it, but for heaven's sakes, it's just a resolution, and fertilizer is important to everybody. 400%. You know, go talk to a greenhouse anywhere across the state about what fertilizer cost last year or 2 years ago when Agrium was in business and what it's going to cost this summer coming, and you'll find that it's all Alaskans that are eating any Alaska produce that's grown in the Mat-Su, that's grown in Delta, that's grown in Fairbanks, flowers and gardens at your house.
Thank you, Representative Ramers. Is your objection maintained?
Yes.
Any other discussion on amendment? And Representative Grunberg, would you read it one more time for the committee?
Line 31 on page 2 would read, provide energy security for Alaskans by taking and encouraging actions necessary to.
Okay.
And can I point out that the rest of the line refers to a bullet line, and it goes on to expand upon Agrium, but it has the same relationship between all Alaskans and a bullet line. If it was just simply a resolution about Agrium, the wording would be different, but it's about a bullet line. So the relationship with the all, both all, the amendment, and the bullet line is consistent with what we did previous.
Point taken. Is your objection maintained?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Kawasaki.
I actually wanted to add a friendly amendment to the conceptual amendment, because in the title, title also reflects that.
Would you like to make the amendment to the amendment?
Can we amend conceptual amendments?
You can amend any amendment once.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Then I'll amend the amendment by taking out the words all in line 1 and all in line 2 of the title.
Okay. Does everyone understand that amendment? But in the terms of consistency, we didn't do that to the other ones. So if we're going to be consistent, then we will continue to be consistent or not.
We'll have to get it.
But we do have an amendment before us, an amendment to the amendment. Is there an objection?
Yes.
There is an objection. Would you like to speak to that objection?
No.
Okay. Would you? Would the amendment to the amendment would be to remove all out of the title? To amend the amendment to remove all of the titles. So the objection has been maintained. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll? And be so that I'm clear, a yes vote would remove the all, add to the amendment all in the title. Everyone clear on that? Good. Go ahead.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton is absent. Representative Edgman is absent. Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Co-chair Newman?
No.
Co-chair Johnson?
No. So the amendment to the amendment has failed, which brings the original amendment before us, which removes on line 31 both alls and adds an S, which would make it read, provide energy security for Alaskans by taking and encouraging actions necessary to. Is your objection maintained?
Yes.
Okay, is discussion on the amendment? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I speaking to this amendment, it says provide energy security. It doesn't necessarily say provide food supply. I do support this resolution as a whole, and I do support this amendment going forward.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Mr. Chairman, the roll is on the original.
This is on the original amendment to remove the alls on line 31 and add an S.
Okay. Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton? Is
absent. Representative Edmond, absent. Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Co-Chair Newman?
No.
Co-Chair Johnson?
No. I have 4-3, the amendment failing. That's correct?
Correct. 3 yeas, 4 nays.
Thank you. So with that, amendment number 1 to HCR 3 has failed. Is there any discussion, which brings the bill before us, is there any discussion on HCR 3? Hearing none, what would be the will of the committee? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution number 3/R from committee with individual recommendations and in an attached fiscal note.
It was not amended, so that's good. Okay, thank you. Is there objection? Hearing none, HCR 3 has passed from committee. Representative Wilson, do you have a question?
I would like to move that we bring the resolution number 2 before us again, so I can rescind the action on amendment number 1.
So you're asking that we rescind, the committee rescind its action on passing HCR 2 out of committee?
Yes.
Is there objection?
Object.
There is objection. Discussion.
Well, I would like
speak to your objection like or to speak to your reason. Why you want to do this, Representative Wilson.
Well, just I guess Jay has convinced me that
Representative Ramirez?
Yes, I'm sorry. Representative Ramirez has convinced me that that the all does include everybody.
Representative Guttenberg, would you like to speak to your objection?
No.
Okay. So the motion before us is that we bring back HCR 2, and I will one more time ask if there's objection. Hearing no objection, HCR 2 is before us. Representative Wilson?
Now, I do believe that we have to rescind. I'm not sure, but I think we have to rescind passing it, and then we have to go back and rescind the...
That is correct.
Okay.
And if you need me to do that, I can.
Yeah, go ahead, but I mean, I can do it. It doesn't matter.
Okay, go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay, I move that we rescind our action of moving House Bill or House Concurrent Resolution number 2 out of committee.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we have HCR 2 before us.
Okay. Now I move that we rescind our actions on amendment number 1.
We have a motion to rescind our action on accepting amendment number 1. Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number 1 has been rescinded. Also, we had amendment 2, which was, I believe, Representative Tug, which failed. So it failed anyway, so not a problem. Thank you, Debbie.
No, it didn't.
Because I normally...
No, it didn't.
No, it passed because I did not. I removed my objection.
Right.
And I don't think that's up for discussion unless somebody wants to bring it up.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Do you want to bring it up?
No, but can you repeat what you just mentioned because I had a hard time following?
Amendment number 2 passed, which was your amendment inserting energy needs of Alaskans and FIRST. That one passed.
Okay.
So that's not up for discussion unless you want to bring it up.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? With that, we have HCR 2 before us. Any discussion on HCR 2? What would be the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dim.
Mr. Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution number 2/E from committee.
As amended.
As amended, with any individual recommendations and fiscal note.
It would be the original version.
No, it was amended.
Oh.
There was an amendment.
Yeah.
It was this amendment 2 passed. Are there objections? Hearing none, I'm about to get confused. So we
you're right on. You're doing fine.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Good. Well, help me here. Am I good? So HCR 2 moves out of committee, which brings before us
as amended,
which brings before us HCR 4.
No.
We've already. Are we done? Have we done 4?
We did 4.
3.
No, we've done 2 and 3.
Oh, that's right.
I was doing good, Peggy. Okay, before us, we have HCR 4. Representative Ramirez, I believe this is yours as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'll be brief. HCR 4 asks the governor to do only what a powerful chief executive in the state of Alaska can do, which is to open up a dialogue with the U.S. Department of Energy to expand our export license. For the benefit of the members of the committee, a question that was asked by Representative Tuck yesterday when he sat on the House Energy Committee was, what is the volume of gas that goes through the Conoco LNG plant? And in 1996, the maximum that was moved was 75 billion cubic feet, and the volume was 230 million cubic feet per day of export. The current authorized amount is 50 billion cubic feet a year, at 137 million cubic feet a day is the authorized volume. And because of issues of deliverability that were addressed by Curtis Thayer from NSTAR, there are many days where the LNG plant is running at less than full capacity, as that capacity is being diverted to heat homes and businesses along South Central Alaska in an otherwise depleted field, Cook Inlet, which is precisely why we're trying to open up another field for an in-state bullet line in other parts of the state. And this would ask the U.S. Department of Energy to provide an export license that would, again, increase the volume of natural gas traveling down an in-state bullet line. And I'll remind the committee members, 500 million cubic feet a day is 180 BCF a year, 60 BCF in light commercial and residential use along the rail belt, 60 BCF for the Agrium facility. So this would direct the governor to request an expansion of that export license of up to another 60 BCF a year, notwithstanding concrete plants in the Mat-Su, notwithstanding gas-to-liquid opportunities for synthetic fuel for the Air Force, notwithstanding International Tower Hill and gold mining prospects that are outside Alive and Good. This simply asks the governor to open a dialogue and to begin discussions about the expansion of an export license. And there's not one molecule of gas that would flow at this point, but it's important that we open up a dialogue with the Department of Energy years in advance in order to try and create an adequate amount of demand when there simply isn't that much usage presently inside the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Gutman.
Thank you. Jay,
yes, sir.
Thank you, for Representative Ramos. Thank you for bringing this. Certainly, it's clear that the volume that we can get out of the ground is good for the economics of any of these projects. But have you explored these options with Department of Energy or anybody else on the ability or their reluctance or acceptance of expanding the exporting of the gas? Because there's a dialogue on a national level, you know, and we hear both sides of that. So we don't quite know what,
yes, sir,
what people think.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I made two trips to Washington, D.C. and visited with two commissioners of the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and on a second trip with Representative Samuels, our former colleague, Senator McGuire. We met with the chairman of FERC. Mark Robinson, who is the director of the FERC with 30-some-odd years of experience, was present at those both of those meetings, as well as a private meeting that Representative Samuels and I had with Mark Robinson when he was in Anchorage for the AGEA gas line hearings. And it's quite important to recognize that non-conventional sources of natural gas, namely the shale formations, the Barnett Shale, some of the shale, the Hood River area, some in Colorado, are displacing conventional gas supplies. In addition, LNG export terminals, LNG import terminals in the United States are expanding from 6 BCF a day to 20 BCF a day that are going to go online by the year 2010. And there is such a glut of natural gas presently in the United States that some of those receiver terminals, one in particular, and I don't have it in front of me, has opened and has only received one shipment of LNG since it's been open the last dozen months or so, because there's such a glut of gas in the United States. And it's important that we initiate a dialogue with the U.S. Department of Energy 5 years before we have a bullet line, 18 months before we have a final investment decision from the private sector entity that's interested in opening this bullet line, so that we can have a sense of how viable it is to expand the demand side of this. Representative Kawasaki talked about a tariff, and if a tariff is at $6 when the pipe is one-third full, then it's at $4 when it's two-thirds full, and it's at $2 when it's completely full. So it certainly is in the best interest of all the rail belt users that pipeline to fill it with as much volume as possible. And my understanding of a working number on a tariff when it's full is $2.50 per M. And as soon as we were in a meeting with Fairbanks Natural Gas, and presently they estimate it's costing them $4 or will cost them $4 an M to haul it from the North Slope. A $2.50 an M tariff is certainly an attractive number. It's not as attractive as what the Cook Inlet enjoys right now because it's at Tidewater, but there are lifting costs associated with lifting gas in Cook Inlet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez. Any additional questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on HCR 4?
Yes. This is Tom Loftus again, if you've got the time.
You know, we really don't, Tom, but I'm hesitant to cut anyone off. Can you do it in a couple minutes?
Yeah, I think what Representative Ramirez said is the most critical part of all your considerations on these bills, is that being able to fill the pipeline is critical to maintaining that low projected cost. And with switching to renewables, and you will not have that load on the pipeline. So it may be wholly uneconomic and an economic burden. But with respect to the Agria plant that NSTAR mentioned, they needed an industrial customer, and Agria could fulfill that role, and the committee should definitely consider, you know, pick sides, the 350 personnel at Agrium or the much smaller amount of personnel that would be serving a foreign interest in the LNG export terminal. And that can be addressed immediately, and we don't have to spend $4 billion and wait 4 years to build a pipeline. Please reconsider and adjust your resolutions to reflect the need to get the gas in state immediately and not wait for either the pipeline or incur its costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lakish. Any questions? Thank you. And once again, I will offer any testimony to anyone in the audience or anyone online. Hearing none, I will close public testimony. Discussion of the committee. Representative Kawasaki, I think I failed to recognize you. I apologize. I did write you down, so you don't. No discussion on HCR 4. I'm feeling like number 4 is being slighted here, guys. Hearing no discussion, what would be the will of the committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution Number 4 /R from committee with any attached fiscal notes or individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Hearing none, HCR 4 moves out of committee with the individual recommendations. Let's see, what does that bring us to? Number 5, and Representative Ramirez, I believe this is yours as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. HCR 5 simply encourages the state government to assist a private sector entity in being able to reach its final investment decision by cooperating with regulatory issues, as was previously stated by Curtis Thayer. And NSTAR presented before the resources body on the other side, they said, we have $1 billion in cash. We have $3 billion worth of financing. We're not asking anything for the state of Alaska other than they get out of the way. And HCR 5 just says explicitly that the governor and her administration shall assist. As you're well aware, Mr. Chairman, when it comes to getting a jackup rig into Cook Inlet or developing Point Thompson, often one hand of the state of Alaska government is fighting against the will of another part of government. And that's what HCR 5 addresses. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Rams. Are there any questions of the sponsor? With that, I will open public testimony. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? I don't have anyone signed up on HCR 5. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on HCR 5? Seeing and not seeing a big rush to the podium, we will close public testimony on HCR 5. That will bring us to committee discussion. Is there any committee discussion on HCR 5? Hearing and seeing none, what would be the will of the committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Concurrent Resolution Number 5 /R from committee with any attached recommendations, individual recommendations, or fiscal notes.
Are there objections? Hearing none, HCR 5 moves out of committee.
Thank you, committee member.
Is there any other business to come before the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
We don't need the committee room this afternoon. If we have anything else you want to run right through.
I think we've done enough. Thank you for that. I'll remember you. Any other business to come before the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we will stand in adjournment. I would like to thank everyone for their attendance.